Well, welcome back to HealthLink On Air, produced each week by Upstate Medical University, making the academic difference in healthcare in the Central New York community. This is your host, Tricia Torrey, every patient's advocate. Dr. Deirdre Nealon has joined me in the studio again this morning, our monthly look at the Healing Muse. Welcome back, Dr. Nealon.
Thank you, Tricia.
I want to remind everyone that Dr. Nealon joins us from the Center of Bioethics and Humanities at Upstate. She's also the editor of the Healing Muse, a journal of literary and visual arts, and some of you listeners who have obtained copies of the Healing Muse may want to take a moment to find them. Follow along as we discuss two more pieces this morning. So, Dr. Nealon, while they do that, let's briefly remind people why you're here and what it is we're talking about.
We like to think of the Healing Muse, Tricia, as a place for dialogue, a place where conversation can occur between people who have had illness, people who are taking care of people with illness, people who are working in the field of health.
Absolutely. And what I love, too, is that you invite people from all over the world, literally.
Totally. Everybody's welcome to submit.
To submit. And then you publish once a year.
We publish once a year in October. We'll have a big party, and all of your listeners are invited to come.
And, you know, for those who are really serious about contributing, do you have a deadline that you're looking for, say, for this October?
Actually, they've just missed our deadline. It was May 1st. We closed.
Okay.
But we'll open again on September 1st.
You will, so,
for
2010.
The following year. Yeah.
Excellent, excellent. Well, let's go to the two pieces that we have chosen for this morning. One of them is called The Other Mothers. It's written by K.B. Kintzer. Do we know anything about her?
We know that she is a woman who is pursuing a degree in poetry, creative writing at the University of Georgia.
Aha.
We did not know anything about her. She just sent us this poem and we loved it.
And you know, when we read it, listeners will hear that it's a little tough to tell exactly who she is.
Yes.
She's just kind of this presence, isn't she?
Yes.
So will you go ahead and read it to us, please?
I would love to. The Other Mothers. They arrive in uniforms of gray, pink, and blue, the colors of dusk, of dawn, patterned like flocks of birds lifting from water to sky, rustling about the room, straightening sheets, plumping pillows, untangling tubes hanging from IV poles that chirp, whir, and tether the bed, a boat floating, trying to drift from this pastel shore. A blur of movement, they bob and turn in short, swift steps, check the charts, temperature, administer meds, and let his mother brush Vaseline over cracked, swollen lips. Let her comb his hair, massage cream into his hands, his feet. Let her stay at the foot of the bed. They wash his body, but cover him as they go, before and after, to expose nothing to janitors swabbing floors, removing trays, emptying trash cans. They support his head, his arms and legs with pillows and blankets, just so, for they've practiced at home, sprawling for hours on couch cushions and foam bolsters. Slats of sunlight enter the room, row slowly across the floor, fade. At night, his mother watches them lift and turn her son to face the window, always east.
Always east.
Yeah, isn't that beautiful?
It really is. And you know, nurses to me are kind of the unsung heroes of healthcare so frequently. So number one, I love the fact that this woman has written about nurses in such a caregiving.
Yes.
You know, such an appreciative. You can hear the appreciation in her voice.
Yes, totally. And I like the way that she's got all the colors, and her words mimic the way shorebirds look at the shore. And she's called her son's bed a boat floating, trying to drift. So he's anchored in the hospital. He's anchored to life. They are trying to attempt to bring him back to her.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's a very loving tribute to just how constantly the nurses come in and out, helping you get better.
Exactly. And I think the Other Mother's title, it seems to come from the fact that they care for this child.
Yes.
We don't know how old the child is. The child
don't.
Could be a few months, a few years.
Yeah, we don't know.
18, we don't know. But what we know is that they do. They're gentle. They're considerate. They consider the modesty of the child.
Isn't that, I loved that idea. That, because it's so hard when you are in the hospital, you give up so much of your privacy, and we try in the hospital to maintain your dignity, but it's an ongoing struggle to do that. And I love that in this, you do see the nurses caring
absolutely.
For him that way.
And then facing the child east.
Yes.
So obviously the room must be on the side where the sun comes up, so the child, there's some sun exposure and some daylight exposure there. But I also... I looked at the sunrise as being also metaphorical for the child getting up and out and seeing daylight again.
Yeah, I think that's a lovely interpretation of it. And she follows him through the day so that at night, when they come back to lift and turn her son so there won't be any bedsores, it's interesting that they then position him east.
Right.
The sun won't be in his eyes then, but east is traditionally the place we face to pray.
So absolutely. Yeah, that's true.
It's
that's
really
true.
Very nice.
Very good. Well, we have a second piece called Faulty Armor, and this one was written by a student. Tell us about this
yes,
student.
Yes, this one I love. This is written by Adam Philip Stern, and he will be a fourth-year medical student at Upstate.
He will?
Starting this next month.
Okay.
And he won our writing award last year with this piece. He calls it Faulty Armor, and it's a short story, so it's a fictional piece. And what he's done is to envision himself a few years down the road from where he is right now as a resident.
Okay. And let's also mention that he's clearly had experiences in hospitals.
Yes. Oh,
and
yes.
He's focusing on one specific specialty in this story.
Yes.
And that would be oncology.
Yes.
And so he's talking about his interface now with one of the patients. And you're going to read us just a few passages. People should know this is
a couple paragraphs.
This is just part
of
his story.
To give you the context.
Okay.
It's an eye narrator, so you're going to hear I'm reading in the voice of the narrator. The patient gazes back at me. I again unexpectedly feel a connection with him, like he's not quite looking at me as his doctor, but as his peer, someone to translate what the medical types are trying to say. We're on the same team against everyone else in the room. This moment of bonding with my patient should feel like a victory, but it does not. It is uncomfortable, and it has shaken my routine. It is not insecurity I'm feeling, but there is something about this encounter that I can't define, and as a fourth year, I live by definition. Something is different. There's an ambiguity I cannot overcome. Have I mishandled my delivery? What is this feeling manifesting in the back of my throat? Ignore it. Shake the feeling. Finish off strong. While most clinicians performing this procedure don't use any local anesthetic, we feel that if it makes the patient more comfortable in any way, we should administer it. After that, you shouldn't feel a thing during the procedure. The patient does not seem impressed. Why should he be? Were I in his hospital gown instead of my surgical scrubs, preventing unnecessary pain wouldn't seem like such an extravagant luxury. His eyes are conveying a request. Ditch the script. Talk straight with me, friend. But hey, I wrote the script.
Hey, I wrote the script. What we learn later in the story, and did you want to read another passage?
No, go ahead.
Okay. What we learn later in the story is that, in fact, the patient is the same age as the student,
yes.
Or actually we learn that
a little younger even.
And that the patient has a wife and young children.
Yes.
And cancer.
Yes.
And we learn
that this young resident is also married and his wife is also expecting. And so during what we call the clinical encounter, which is such a cold term for what is two people talking about life and death procedures, during this clinical encounter, the young resident has discovered this information about his patient, bringing them ever closer in an identity crisis.
Right. One thing we know about many doctors, not all certainly, but many doctors, and I think in particular in specialties such as oncology, where you're dealing with life and death situations on a daily basis, doctors are able to set up barriers, which they almost need to do. I don't know how particularly an oncologist would get through an entire career caring and investing in every patient. And so they need to develop that. And he's being taught as a student doctor to develop that.
Yes.
And this is his hiccup.
Yes, exactly. It's so interesting because this is what happens to people in training.
Mm-hmm.
We used to have this term called detached concern.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we were encouraging supposedly physicians to develop so that they would have a concern for you, the patient, but they could somehow detach from that concern so that they could make objective diagnoses and give you the correct treatment.
And still go home at night and spend time with their family and sleep at night.
Right.
You know, the psychology of it has got to be just fascinating.
Yeah, I think that it is.
But if you even take it a step further, I think that this student doctor looks at it like, oh my gosh, this is going to affect how I look at every other patient from now on.
Yeah. And actually, when you look at the beginning of his short story, he tells you that sometimes the gods send you a case like this, which brings you back to I'm a person treating another person.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
that he almost wants the faulty armor that he talks about. He hasn't put on that total armor that makes
right.
him impervious to
right.
the other person's pain.
He wants it. Not only that, it bothers him when he no longer has
yes,
it.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And it is an important point. And don't you think we've all come up in places in our lifetimes where we've realized that age has started to influence how we think? I mean, I remember not too many years ago, thankfully, when I was still working for one of the large marketing firms here in town, remember realizing that one of my colleagues was the age of my daughter.
Yes,
and to me,
yes.
that was this huge wake-up call. That, oh, my gosh, now my children are old enough to have professional friends.
Yes.
And they were professionals, too.
Yes, totally. I mean, I can remember when I started my teaching career, and as a grad student, I would be teaching students who were 2 years younger than I was. And that was so exciting and great. And then it seems like within a moment's time, They're old enough to be almost my grandchildren.
And
that's
no.
a little bit disconcerting. But I think for new physicians, new nurses, yes, this is very true.
Absolutely true. Well, we had a theme sort of age this morning and looking across that spectrum. And Dr. Deirdre Nealon, I so much appreciate your coming in to talk about the Healing Muse this morning.
I thank you so much, Tricia, for having
we'll
me.
We'll look forward to your return next month. And listeners, we're going to take a quick break. Please do stay with us. This is Upstate Medical University's HealthLink on air on 570 WSYR.